You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It's curtains up on another episode of West of Broadway. I'm Broadway veteran Will Armstrong, joined with my fellow Broadway veteran Wendy Rosoff.
Hi, Will.
How's everything going?
Everything is great.
I am having so much fun doing this with you.
We're having the best time ever.
I can't believe how busy we are.
I know. There's so much going on. I can't even deal with it.
You know how you do your bat calls? I feel like you did a bat call for West of Broadway, and now we are inundated with opportunities.
I feel like I bat called the universe.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we've done such amazing stuff, like the other day when we went to Margaritaville.
It was so much fun, yep.
And you're best friends forever with Jimmy Buffett. Which is incredible.
What did you say? Jimmy and I really had some chemistry.
You did.
Jimmy, well, if you hear that. Hey, Jimmy, I know you're listening to West of Broadway. Call me boo.
He subscribed and gave us 5 stars. I don't know if you know.
Oh my God, that would be so great.
But yeah, there's so much happening here in Los Angeles, whether it's the juggernauts like the Pantages or the Amundsen, which we're going to be seeing Book of Mormon very soon.
So exciting. I love that show so much. It's so brilliant.
And then the regional productions, like what's happening at the Pasadena Playhouse.
Yep.
And then the East West Players.
Super excited about that.
Are doing Assassins.
Yes, which is such a phenomenal show.
How much do you love Sondheim?
I live for Sondheim. Did you know that when I was like, because my parents are professional musicians and I grew up sitting in the pit next to my dad, and one of the first musicals that I ever saw was Sweeney Todd,
which is
so inappropriate for a child. But I think I was like 5 or 6, literally, and I looked up and I was like, oh, that's nice. Joanna, beggar woman, da da da. I was like, Mrs. Lovett, that's for me. Like, I was a 5-year-old Mrs. Lovett. And that's always been my castability issue, too. Like, I look like I look, and then I'm like, yeah, like, give me a cigar and bourbon.
and then there's just, like, the barber chair slides of death, like, in that show. I know.
It's brilliant.
How amazing.
That's my number one so far Sondheim show is Sweeney Todd. What's yours? What's your fave?
You're going to think I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I'm such a history nut, I really appreciate Hamilton, but everybody loves Hamilton. So the one that really, and it's not a dance show at all, but it makes me, even if I talk about it right now, I'm going to start crying, but Come From Away.
Oh, just, it's so beautiful. But that's not Sondheim.
I thought you meant just musicals in general.
No, but I appreciate you branching out. What's your Sondheim show?
My favorite Sondheim, Company. Definitely
Company. Oh, I forgot about that.
Because I'm such a romantic.
Oh, it's so good.
And that, like, just the being alive.
Yeah, I'm totally looking forward to this new version.
Super looking forward to it. I mean, yeah. No, but being a aspiring and working actor in New York,
mm-hmm.
I would listen to Another 100 People as I walk down the street, like, all the time. It spoke to me. It just felt like I was living that.
I love Company so much too. Mm-hmm. Love it. But I do have a little bit of scar tissue surrounding it because one of my first roommates in New York was working on being alive, like, incessantly in his room. And we were all like making $1.50 and had like this like Shantyville apartment. And he was just like belting his brains out for what seemed like 5 hours at a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you're not going to be alive much longer if you keep it up. Just knock it off.
Just maybe knock it off. Maybe you, maybe any one of your New York neighbors will go completely ham on him. Like, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Barely made it. Just stuff we go through. But I'm so grateful for all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just amazing.
It's part of our history and identity.
And it's a shared identity that I think that we have with just like performers that are coming up now. Mm-hmm. Like, we've walked that walk. We know that path.
We know the
sacrifices you have to make.
I always say to my students, you know, I was like, it's different from any other relationship you're going to have with multi-generational, you know, a student-professor relationship, because I'm actually just the older version of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it is with all of us. Like, we literally have walked this extraordinary walk that you are attempting to be on, and the passion that you have, we understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So we all speak the same language, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, it is incredible, and I love it. And it's a huge responsibility, and it's a beautiful thing to witness, especially after you've...
Amazing.
Yeah.
I consider it an honor. I really do.
That's so great.
Yeah.
You're such a good teacher.
Oh, thanks.
And that's the thing, is like, I've taken your class before, and the class was so much fun, but the thing I love the most about it is the people that are attracted to it.
Oh, God, I know.
They're like hearts
of
gold.
My little magical tribe is just... Hearts of gold is exactly it. So supportive of each other. Scary. I mean, it's not what's scary when you're an amazing singer and actor and you put yourself in the weak spot of being in a a dance call or something that's caused you nightmares and you're going, okay, I'm in it. And I know that I'm going to fail and I'm into it.
Right.
So I'm so for them.
Yeah.
I'm
no.
The biggest fan.
So as an educator at AMDA, which is awesome, and you churn out tons of
churn and burn.
But what do we call it? Just like they're industry ready, you know, like to and at this production of Assassins that's coming up, one of your former students
one
is in it.
One of my former students who I'm so excited about. He's really having quite a time of it in the best way possible. And it makes me super proud, not because I had any part of it, but because we had several discussions before he graduated AMDA about his concerns, you know, coming into the marketplace for a myriad of reasons. And I'm just so proud of where he is and where he's going. He's doing fantastic.
Yeah, George Xavier is joining the cast of the East West Players production of Assassins.
Yes.
And we're going to talk to him in just a bit, but first, we're talking with Gede Watanabe. Yes, Watanabe.
Yes.
Who everyone listening probably knows from 16 Candles.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't know is that he's also a
prolific stage actor.
Yes. I mean, his laundry list of film and television roles, like if you IMDb him or Wikipedia him, like it is crazy. But the stuff that he's done, and he's a veteran actor with the East West Players, which is an incredible organization, and I can't wait to talk to him about that.
I'm so looking forward to this.
Cool. Let's call him right now.
All right, great.
Gede Watanabe, welcome to West of Broadway.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We are so excited about this upcoming production of Assassins.
Yes.
That's put on by the East West Players, and I have so many questions. But first, can you? I know that this is not your first production with the East West Players. I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about the organization.
Oh my goodness! You know, East West Players started, I think, in the early '80s. As a matter of fact, I can't quite remember, and I might be wrong. But with the first artistic director was, remember Mako, because Mako did Pacific Overture, and that was my first show.
Yes.
With Mako, and I was I was very young then.
You performed that on Broadway, correct?
I did the original Broadway show. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was an incredible cast.
It was quite an experience for someone as young as I was, the youngest one in the cast.
Oh, so, wow. I bet that was like a masterclass to watch.
It was great. It was really incredible, but I really didn't know who Prince and Sondheim were.
Oh, my
gosh.
So
that shows you how naive I know.
Well, maybe that was a blessing in disguise, because I would have been freaked out.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, I think so. I think that kind of saved me, because I was a little bit, you know, I think a little bit precocious and pushy, I would imagine.
and Gede, was this before you did the you performed in 16 Candles, or like, or after?
Oh, no, 16 Candles was a lot after. I was in my 30s. I was always in my late 20s. I think I was 29 when I did 16 Candles. And so how old was I? I was 19 when I did Overtures.
Oh my gosh.
I have to do the math. I know. Yeah.
What an amazing career. We were doing our research, and we were on Wikipedia and IMDb, and it just scrolling and scrolling.
Prolific.
And scrolling. Just amazing.
Scrolling and scrolling and scrolling.
I have to look at it someday. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, okay. you need to see how impressive you are.
And, well, the funny thing is that I'm not really on social media, and so I. It's like one of the, you know what I mean, like, which I probably should get onto. But everybody else on the show is, so I figured, oh, I'm covered.
Yeah, right.
A while back, we interviewed Ken Page, who was the Oogie Boogie Man and a million other things on Broadway. And he was the same. He's just like, I'm not on social media. And I was like, I don't think you need to be, because you're doing just fine.
Yeah.
And I feel the same. Like,
exactly.
It ain't broke, don't fix
you're
it.
You're doing okay.
Oh, yeah. I adore him. Oh, my God. He's always crossed my path several times.
He's just amazing. Yes. He's such an incredible human being, and what a talent. And
I think I saw him. The first show was Ain't Misbehave. I remember watching
God.
This show.
Incredible.
Charlene Woodard, and also we did a show together later in the years too. So, incredible. Oh my God. Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so we were going through and we went in our research looking at the East-West Players and all of the shows they do. Oh. And their casting that they do is so incredible and open and just giving voices and giving opportunities to so many people.
They did shows, or we do shows that no, you know, back in the 80s, no one would have cast you in any of the shows they did. So, especially if you're Asian American or Asian guy, Mako really saw that there was a need for it because, you know, we needed the classics. We needed to do all sorts of really wonderful. And so I came in later, but I knew of East West Players. I was lucky because I wanted to study in New York as much as I could, so I stayed in New York for quite a while after that. And then I think in the 90s, particularly when Tim Dane took over, we did a funny thing happen on the way to the Forum, and it was just hysterically fun. I had so much fun doing it.
So who did you play
again,
in
you know,
that?
These are things. I played Pseudolus.
Oh my gosh. Oh, how fun.
Tim told Stephen that I was playing Pseudolus, and he said, isn't he a little young for that? I think I heard that.
Perfect.
Yeah, but we found our way. It was really a beautiful production that he kind of set in the Easter Islands.
Oh, cool.
And so, it was really fun and really just raucous fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was good for me. I could let loose.
Sure.
So that was nice.
So
that's what East Players is.
That incredible. And you were in Assassins, you're playing Charles Goodeau, who
I am.
And can you talk a little bit about what you bring to that particular role?
I didn't know the show, to be quite honest with you. I was trying to figure out, and Snehal said, "Oh, Getty, would you like to do this show?" And I said, "Sure," but I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It is crazy. It's a crazy show. So initially, this is what happened. Was like I, you know, went through my Gettyism, which is like, oh my god, I'm like, what am I gonna do? How am I gonna do this? And then when we started to rehearse, you know, just Snehal's really good at connecting the dots for me. So it's starting to gel. I know this is our second week of rehearsal, but you know, I approach most everything with caution, just so that I can figure out if I could bring myself into it, you know, as much as I can.
Well, I feel like Charles Goodeau is polar opposite, just talking to you right now, because was a conflicted personality. And so I'm just fascinated to see you perform.
You know,
this.
when you do research on this man, it's a fascinating, you know, profile, because he's paranoid schizophrenic, I would assume, and had neurosyphilis. So a neurosyphilis that time wasn't diagnosed.
Right.
And so, and I think his brain is somewhere in a container in some museum, because they found it unusually enlarged, which means that they, most likely it was neurosyphilis. And it also may have been caused by a prostitute. Which is kind of funny, because he was religious.
Yes, he was part of a religious commune
in
the Northeast.
A religious commune that reminded me of the Mormons, where I grew up.
Mm.
And many wives, that type of thing.
Yes.
That kind of history. So there was a lot of dynamics in him. But, you know, the one particular thing, and this is what happens to me when I get overly indulgent and trying to figure out something as stupid as this, he didn't wear any socks. So I, you know, as an actor, that's just fascinating as hell. You know, at that time, and I thought, well, maybe they were too expensive, I don't know, but there's no there's no answer to why he doesn't, why he didn't wear socks.
Wow.
And it was just killing me. And I thought, well, if he had neurosyphilis, I've seen people with feet who grow welts from neurosyphilis. And, you know, neurosyphilis, it was kind of a dementia. It could develop into a dementia that people, unfortunate people with AIDS, you know, during the 80s and the 70s, AIDS, when we're losing everybody, that's what they were diagnosed with, neurosyphilis. So, and then it made you so erratic and so you didn't know who the person was. And I remember friends dying and their personalities completely changed,
yeah,
you know, during that period of time. So it was, it's a fascinating thing. And it, you know, it's like you need bipolar medication, I would imagine, to figure him out in some bizarre way.
It adds so many dimensions to the character because
it does.
You know,
it
you're
does.
Able to look at it through a different lens, I would imagine, because we're not just dealing with somebody who, you know, was violent and that's the end of the story. There's so much more to it because of the illness.
Well, and that's what I, well, of course, that's kind of where you were. You're going towards, you're looking at the illness, because that's probably, well, there was a lot of things. I guess he was abusive to his wife, but I read that his father was pretty abusive to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's so much. And as you keep tearing apart and read some of the books, there's all these whatchamacallits on him. His court appearances were recorded. And they're very religious and very, very, you know, very, I don't even know how to say this, but delusional.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he understood the Bible. He understood, I think it was, I think it was St. Paul or something that he saw, or Luke, that he, one of the saints that he followed. And it was just, it's just a bizarre combination. I'm not religious at all, so I don't know. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
it's a fascinating journey for me.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, I from being afraid of it, now I'm just taking this journey of like, wow, who is this guy?
You know, well, and it's so fun to be able to deal with somebody historical. And I'm an actor myself, and being able to dive into all that material and arm yourself with the actual history of somebody, it fills up the well, right?
Yeah. Yes. And all the actors are doing it too. I can see that, you know, because we're all coming together and we're all talking about, we're all talking about what we did.
Yeah, great.
But mine, particularly with no socks, just kills me.
I know, I love that. I love that.
I imagine.
Why did he not wear socks?
That's the thing.
And you know what? There's a part of me that doesn't want to know. Because it'll keep me going.
Sure, sure.
Well, I imagine, you know? with mounting this particular production at this time in our country's like political climate, I'm sure it's opened up to a lot of discussions and a lot of discoveries with your fellow cast members, telling this story of a group of people who at different times in our nation's history were essentially unhappy with the way things were going and took matters into their own hands.
Oh my God, that subject has come up. In fact, it was so funny because I think yesterday the president was in town, apparently.
Yes.
And I went in and mentioned it, and you could see all the faces and go, oh.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I am not at all an advocate of any kind of violence whatsoever, but, you know, that's the underlying thing. It's like our nation is under threat.
Mm-hmm.
We are totally in a world where the unknown is probably bigger than we've ever experienced. I've never experienced anything like this.
Nope.
A lot of people. So we don't know what the platform, what the future is ahead of us, and we're scared. We're all scared. So it's interesting to do this piece now, because it's I don't know. I'm curious to see how the audience, this show needs an audience, because the thing is that I'm really curious to see how in this given circumstances of a balloon system, how people are going to react to this. I'm dead curious. I have no idea. I have no expectation or anticipation about it.
Well, we're super excited to come and see it.
And we're going to find out on March 12th. The run of Assassins, but performed by the East West Players, is going to be from March 12th to April 5th. And tickets are available at eastwestplayers.org. Getty, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And it was such an honor to talk to you and get to know you a little bit.
I can't wait to see where you go with the socks. The lack of socks.
I know. Well,
I'll be watching.
Unfortunately, she gave me boots to wear.
Oh, no. Well,
I made her.
We know.
But I made her. Yes, you know. But I made her. Those are the things, the underlying things that for an actor to pick up. Like,
for sure. For sure.
But I mean, I made her cut the pants shorter.
There you go.
So there you go.
Thank you so much for your time. This has been a great talk.
Thank you so much. Enjoy.
Okay,
enjoy the rest of your day and take care. And good luck with Assassins. Bye.
Bye.
George Xavier, welcome to Western Broadway.
Welcome, George.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
It's so great to have you. And I can't believe the coincidence that Wendy was a former professor of yours at AMDA.
Yes, I was.
Yes, she was, but not just for dance, for so many classes, musical theater, film, life, everything.
Your life teacher. You know what, George? I'm so thrilled for all of the success you're finding, and I'm not surprised. And I always think about one of the conversations, I don't know if you remember it, that we had in industry and networking, talking about your concern and your type and the information that you've gotten. And I'm just so excited for you and what you found.
Thank you, Wendy. That really does mean a lot. You know, it's a lot of finding your own way. You know, I feel like everyone has their opinion.
Yes.
Opinions are like hats. Everyone can wear one, but not everyone looks good in one.
You got it. You got it.
I love
but
that.
I definitely have found my own way. You know, I'm definitely ignoring other voices. I'm letting myself be seen, and I'm not putting myself, I'm not sacrificing my happiness for others.
There
basically.
You go. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of happiness, I bet you're finding plenty of it working with the East West Players. What's that like?
Let me tell you, East West Players is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's first of all, their idea of this inclusivity of just people of color in shows we normally wouldn't get cast in is something that I've never experienced, you know, and a lot of people haven't experienced in my cast either. And so it's a little amazing how it just melds together to create this thing, you know, this thing that we never thought, this beautiful creation of just art, you know. This is art in its purest form, I feel.
Yeah. And it's reflective of our time, and I feel like it's so past due, and it's so thrilling to see representation everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about how Assassins is going and the character you're playing and how rehearsals are going.
Okay. So Assassins. I felt like Sondheim and Weidman.
Wait, what's the show? Assassins.
I feel like they wrote this show with the intention. They were like, how can we destroy these actors? It's really an incredible show.
Tell us about your character a little bit.
I play Leon Czolgosz, the assassin who killed William McKinley. Mm-hmm. If you never heard of him, that's okay, because I'm sure many people haven't.
Mm-hmm.
He was an assassin who killed the president for the working man. A notable line he has in the show is, why should other men suffer when one man sits with glory, you know?
Mm. Wow.
So he's a...
Timely.
I find him unlike the other assassins in the way where I felt like the assassins had a bit of a selfish motive, you know? Like, is for John Hinckley, for example, he killed or he tried to assassinate Reagan for underage Jodie Foster,
right?
You know?
Yeah. But where you feel like your character is more altruistic?
Yes, exactly. He definitely thought that if I kill McKinley, the working man, the people who are getting paid 5 cents a day are going to be liberated, are going mm-hmm. to feel the repercussions in a positive way because of this.
Exactly. He was influenced directly by the work of Emma Goldman, who is who people may know from Ragtime.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
Exactly. And so yes, it's an amazing journey that Leon Schlagosch. It's so hard to say.
Will does not like pronouncing that last name.
Well, it is.
I feel like I've had my own Sondheim musical here watching you pronounce
I'm
that
like,
last name.
Well, yeah, no, it is not fun. But incidentally, after he was convicted and put to death through the electric chair, they put him in the casket and then poured sulfuric acid, liquefying him, and then buried him on the grounds of the prison. I love history, so
wait, that is so gory.
They wanted to make sure.
Yeah,
they wanted to make sure.
They wanted to make sure that he was liquefied.
Yeah,
that's disgusting.
Yeah,
like disintegrated.
Wow.
It was like we killed you, but we're gonna kill you some more.
Yeah, here's next level killing.
Yeah,
incredible.
Yeah,
and he apparently William McKinley loved to shake the hands of everyone that came to see him, and they would start a procession and people would come through and he would shake with one hand, put his left hand on their back and kind of usher them along and say hi to everyone.
Yeah.
And Leon came up with a bandage wrapped around his hand and the gun in the bandage and shot him twice in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Right in the stomach. The way it played out was so perfect for Schlagosch, because even McKinley, he was there shaking hands and he had security that was supposed to be in front of him blocking. But he said, I do not want security to get in the way of me meeting the public, the voters.
Mm.
And one decision.
Yep.
That's all
it
took.
One decision, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, George, what has it been like working with this phenomenal cast?
Oh, man. It's been like the greatest learning
mm-hmm.
lesson, or the greatest like class ever. Just every performer that I see go up there, I feel like taking notes, because I could learn so much from all of them.
Yeah, and you know, it's so funny because I'm, of course, every time I talk to you, I feel like my teacher hat just comes on. But, you know, George, again, he was one of those students too who, like, you know, there are some students who take class and they're in class for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But George was a student who, you were an observer. You observed everybody, and I could see you're like a sponge, George. And so I'm just so happy that you're getting to be a sponge with the best of the best.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That's how I learned.
That's, I think, the best way to do it. You
100%.
Know, you learn by doing.
Yeah.
And especially these people who have their Broadway credits, you know,
mm-hmm.
Getty, who you guys
just spoke to. Yeah.
He knows Sondheim even, you know?
We chatted with him about that. And he was talking about when he was young, 19 years old, and he got hired for Pacific Overtures, and he was in the room with Hal Prince and Sondheim in that phenomenal cast. And he basically just said the same thing that you said, which is that just being in the room with these, you know, masters was such a phenomenal learning experience, and how he became, you know, the actor that he is today, really.
Yeah, it's just... it's wild how this all happened,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, you never think, I personally never thought I'd be able to do a show at East West Players. You know?
I am
I'm
not
sure most
surprised.
People... Thank you, Wendy.
So, George.
I did want to...
Oh, sorry.
Yes, Will.
So, I would say, when I was doing my research on you and going on your website, like, you have representation, you have your agent, you have a manager, you're booking your gigs, your website's at, like, tip-top shape. What are some other trajectories that you're planning, or are you just kind of going for the ride and just kind of seeing where life takes you? Or like, what are your plans, like, as far as a new working actor kind of booking gigs? What are your goals?
And maybe this is a novice idea, I don't know, but my only trajectory right now is musical theater.
Cool.
I see nothing else but the musical theater. You know, I did try the film, but and other facets, but I haven't been very passionate about it. It's something about the dance, the acting, the singing, the musical theater itself that's so alluring.
Mm-hmm.
It's something about it, you know?
It's the best way to fill up all of your buckets, because there's something for every part of your soul with musical theater.
I love the way you just put that,
absolutely.
Will. That's beautiful. Great.
But yeah, no, George, this is super, super cool. And how long is the rehearsal process for Assassins?
So we are rehearsing for this week, well, this Friday, we're doing our first full run through, and we started last Tuesday.
Wow.
So we are moving. We are moving fast.
You're
I think
and
next
grooving.
Week is our final week, and we should be up. But I gotta say, I've never been exposed to a show that needs this much detail by detail.
Yeah.
You can tell that there was a lot that went into this show. I don't know if you know, but when it first came off Broadway, as opposed to the revival, the Broadway revival, mm-hmm. as they call it, there's a lot of it that's really different.
Yes.
And so it took, you can tell all the work and time it took to create the first one. And then they took so much more time and work to make the second version of it, you know?
Well, it started off Broadway, and then it went to London, and then they added some songs, and then it opened on Broadway.
Yes.
Then they did it in encores, and then they did a revival. So it's had many incarnations.
Yes.
So interesting.
It definitely, definitely has.
I can't wait to see you in this, George. I'm super excited. I'm coming.
I can't wait. Oh, I'll be sure. You got to let me know when, though. So
I'll be sure to be good
that night.
I have a wacky question, and maybe there's no answer for this. But when we were talking to Getty, he told us that an interesting fact was that his character never wore socks. Is there a really idiosyncratic, like, element of your character that you're embracing or that you found interesting that is helping you define your character?
Oh, absolutely. Czolgosz never ate in front of anyone because he didn't want people to think that he was rich and showing off.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating.
It's so cool.
Cool. I want to bring socks to Getty, but I was like, I guess I can bring you Uber Eats.
Snickers.
go around the corner and eat this.
George,
go ahead. I was going to say the first stage direction before the music starts in anything is Czolgosz appears eating an apple. The minute anyone spots him, he hides it.
Mm.
Very cool. Interesting. That's so fascinating. Just like, because these people are all damaged at different levels, and to see that evolution and that journey, and your interpretation of it, I feel like it's a fascinating project for any actor. What an honor
definitely.
What an exciting journey for you, George. It's incredible.
Yes. No. To not necessarily make this character likable, because what's likable about killing the president, but to show his human, to show
that's right
why he was a patriot in his own right,
yeah.
You know?
And I'm just bringing it full circle. I love the fact that, you know, you brought up the point at the top of the interview that he really did believe that he was coming from an altruistic place, and that does in his mind make him a patriot. And so, you know, everybody can on some level relate to that. He just happened to be, you know, seemingly mentally ill.
Yes.
But he truly believed that he had locked into something that was going to be for the betterment of the working man and mankind.
So we're so excited and proud of you. It's been such a privilege for me to talk with you. And I'm so glad to be here and witness you reconnect with Wendy. And we so look forward to seeing you. Hopefully we'll be there on opening night.
Oh, fingers crossed.
My goodness. Thank you so much. I got to say, it's such an honor to be here. I was so nervous talking to you right now. I got armpit sweats and everything going on.
You did great.
You did very, very well.
All right, George, I'll see you soon. I cannot wait. And again, just super proud of you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Right.
It's a pleasure, and have a great day, both of you.
You too. Bye.
Bye. What a sweetheart. You must be so proud. I know we've said that a million times, but...
I know. Well, it can't be said enough. I really, really am. And George, in addition to other students of mine who are finding amazing success, you know, it really is about finding your own way. And George said it when he was talking about, you know, kind of finding the voices that he listens to and not letting himself be dissuaded mm-hmm. from finding his own path. And, you know, in one way or another, the students of mine that are finding their success are on that exact trajectory
right.
where they're figuring it out. And that's what it is, because, you know, this business is the most nonlinear. There's no way that you can predict what the path is going to be.
But it's so funny, because after you live that path and walk that path, if you take a step back and you look at it,
yeah,
it makes so much sense.
Hindsight is 2020, but in real time, it feels like anarchy.
Right. But now, but for example, you, to see that you're here on this side interviewing people,
yeah,
and telling stories of other working actors.
Never in a million years would I have guessed.
But you're so good at it. And I feel like it's really fun to watch this happen, you know? And it's just, it's such a, this is such an honor that we have this ability to create content, mm-hmm, and tell stories and share stories about stuff that we're passionate about.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Is that as technology and digital transformation happens so much, one of the perks of it is that we are able, mm-hmm, to kind of hop around, mm-hmm, much, much more than when you and I were first coming up, right? Yeah. So we can do so many different things, and I can still be a performer and support other performers and hop back and forth between all mediums. And it's just so exciting. And I love being a fan of other performers. And I mean, it's just such an honor teaching, yeah, these young artists and watching them just, you know, explode. I love it.
It's just so crazy. I mean, just to think that just in the past couple of days, like meeting Jimmy Buffett, mm-hmm, and meeting Getty Watanabe,
yeah,
and talking with him, and all of the, like, I've connected with Laura Benanti and, mm-hmm, Betty Buckley and Adam Pascal, yeah, and just like the people that this project has allowed me to just, in my own little way, thank them for the impact that they've done on me, that they've impacted on me, but also on this art form that I care so much about.
Yeah.
It's just really amazing, and I'm so grateful for it. And I'm grateful for you to being on this journey.
I'm grateful for you, friend. And there's so much more to come. I'm just really excited about where we're headed.
Yes. And I'm also grateful for everyone listening. So thank you very much.
We love you, listeners.
Yes. And we love the Broadway Podcast Network. And thank you so much for welcoming us into, mm-hmm, your family as well. And special thanks to Broadway World, who's always quick to stream our shows and share it with all of their viewers, which is just incredible. So we are always available at broadwaypodcastnetwork.com/West of Broadway. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Will and Wendy, all one word. I'm Will Armstrong PR on Instagram.
I am Wendy _Rosoff on Instagram.
So we make it super easy for you to find us on all sorts of platforms. But just remember, if you're ever looking for us, you can find us
just west of Broadway.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.